This is My First Ride, a podcast asking all sorts of questions about firsts, from innocent moments to adult events. You might want to bear that in mind if there are younger ears around.
So, this is a podcast asking all about the big firsts in our lives.
And if my granny came, she'd be smoking her players, and then we weren't allowed to roll down the windows because we'd all get earaches and die. But I used to get in the boot, and my mother used to say, if you want anything, just knock. So I'd be like going, knock, 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 air, please.
My First Ride with Laura and Emma.
This time on My First Ride, he's the comedian who always makes us laugh, and he can pull off 80s style like no other. It's Bernard O'Shea. Bernard O'Shea, thank you so much for joining us on My First Ride.
Thank you very much for having me. yes, sorry, you caught me a little bit off guard there. Yeah.
You're like, awkward. Yeah. She's talking about her first ride here. What the hell? Yeah.
Well, I think Joseph O'Connor, do you know the writer who the famous Irish writer?
Yeah.
He had a great story in one of his first books about going to America. Now, you're probably too young to remember, where he's in a theme park in America, and they're talking about the rides. And of course, all the Irish people think this is just the funniest thing they've ever heard in their life.
Yeah. Americans just don't get it.
No.
Or maybe we don't.
Maybe it does.
So, Bernard, as you know, the podcast is all about firsts, and we're going to be absolutely grilling you about yours. So do you want to tell us about your first memory?
I was so glad you asked me the first memory, because it took me a while to think, what actually is it?
Yeah.
My first memory is, for Christmas, we got a black plastic cow, right? And it was, and it had this kind of fake saddle on it, right? And it had wheels. And my first memory is my sister Cawth wheeling me up and down the backyard on it.
That's a nice memory.
Yeah.
And it was definitely a cow and not a horse.
It's a cow, yeah. Because I thought to myself, why would you ride a cow, you know?
why not?
To keep it in tune with the name of the podcast. But yeah, why not? It was, yeah. And I just remember it was this shiny black colour, and it had this kind of brown leather saddle. So that's one of my first memories.
Was it like a little kind of, you know, like a little toy bike for kids, like that kind of size? Or is this like a big ass cow?
No, it was a kind of a toy. Yeah, because I would have known what a cow was, because our house was surrounded by cows. We weren't farmers, but we lived amongst cows.
A bit like myself, Bernard. I came from the country and I lived amongst cows and sheep, but I'm not a farmer.
Yes. Okay, well, yes, exactly. So you'll know. Yeah, you'd go. Yeah, look at all the those beautiful cows who are, by the way, who when they do, one thing I noticed about growing up in the country but surrounded by cows, when they're in the fields they're fine, but when they get into someone's house by accident, they
Good
go
luck.
Bonkers.
Has that happened in your house as a child ever?
Yeah, well, I remember once a horse got into our house and just kept running around the house for a good half an hour. And my father got really worried because he felt that the horse would hurt itself. Not that he's three, four small children would be hurt. Yeah, there's nothing I'd seen your father go out and actually try and grab a horse that's pelting around your house to realise, that's a bit, that's what a tough mofo is. Do you know what I mean? But, yeah, they used to get in all the time, but yeah, we were kind of used to it at the end.
It kind of reminds me of, do you remember when you were younger and a dog would get into the school and everyone in the school would go wild running around after the dog?
It was my favourite days.
Or some of my favourite sporting memories is when a dog gets onto the field.
Yes.
I try to get my dog currently to go on to pitches to run after balls, because I love the sight of it so much. He's no interest in me at all. He's
like, no. Just none.
Speaking of dogs getting into schools, do you remember your first day at school?
It was in the primary school in Durrow, Our Lady's Meadow. And I remember the green doors with the yellow handles and being terrified about going to the toilet. I kept saying to myself, but like, do I have to go in on my own? And eventually the teacher just showed me where the toilet was. And I've been back there since a good few times. I was back there more recently with Marty. We went up to the school. We're doing something in Durrow. And and I just remember, going in, and straight away I remember the furniture. I remember the smell. But yeah, that was, I do remember my first day. And I remember there was a sand pit and there was a queue to play with the sandpit. Yeah, I remember my first day really, really vividly, really well.
And I know you mentioned Marty there, and I think the whole nation knows that Marty and you are best pals. But do you remember who your first friend was?
Probably Tony, my next door neighbour, probably was my first friend. We were the same age growing up. And he was just like maybe two houses down or something, or up, depending on what way you look at the road. And then as we grew older, the lads on the road basically would have been your friends. And then your friends in school and stuff like that. You know, Duro had a boys' school and a girls' school at the time as well. So, you know, it wasn't mixed. Nowadays, it's just one school. I think most of them are. So, yeah, we would have, all my friends would have obviously been from school in the road, you know.
And were you terrified of the girls? Do you know the way when you're in like an all boys school or an all girls school and you're grown up and you're not too used to having female friends or male friends? What were you guys like with the girls?
I was fine and terrified of them because I had three older sisters that basically terrorized me. And I would like to take this opportunity now to point out to them that they, like, I used to joke years ago about, like, you know, oh, you hit like a girl. And I grew up with three older sisters and they beat the living bejesus out of me. Like, so, like, I don't know where that comes from.
I think it's a compliment. I think boys have been using it wrong all these years. Yeah. It's a compliment.
The weaker sex, I do not think so.
No.
I can make another human being and beat the living bejesus out of you. So it's and so I do remember them. My sisters were, I suppose, formative because my granny lived with us as well, and my mum. But in fairness, my mother and my granny and my father at times tried to protect me as best as they could. Like, they would use me as a human doll, and I mean genuinely. So they, so because I, like, when I was maybe like my own kid's age, is like maybe two, five, six, seven, that kind of age, you couldn't just run out in the road, even though there was no traffic at the time, really. But like your next door neighbor, like my friends would have been maybe a 5 minute walk. So they'd be bored and I'd be bored. So they'd say, Bernard, come into the room. I'd be only delighted. And they would actually, you know, put a dress on me. They'd put makeup on me. They would, I remember they had magazines and they would try it and make me look like either pop stars and smash hits or, you know, so I remember one day, and even though she denies it, she still denies it. My sister got me ready for school and put me in her old pinafore. Yeah. And I went in, and in fairness to the teachers at the time, they were like, okay, fair enough. And, but because she wanted so desperately a younger sister, because she only had older sisters. I grew up in a house of women, so it was just, I was used to it. And it was really sibling kind of, like, you know, rivalry in terms of, like, you know, there was a lot of us. I was equally afraid and adapt.
I love how she sent you into the boys' school in the girls' school uniform and you just took off being like,
this was when, I think you split off at first class or something.
Oh,
this
fair enough.
Inference, yeah. She just, you know, I don't think there was any malice in it. I just think she really wanted a younger sister.
And you were very accommodating. Yeah.
If it's any consolation, my younger brother, who is 5 years younger than me, I also wanted a younger sister, but he took it upon himself to be my younger sister because I used to go to loads of birthday parties at the time, and my mother used to call it my party dress. You know, you always put on your lovely party dress going to the party. He threw a fit one day because he wanted a party dress to go to the party. So she just dressed him up in one of my dresses, and we still have photos, and it kills me to this day that we didn't have like iPhones and videos, because I will never forget. It's like ingrained in my brain of him being about 3-4 years old, and he looked like a little sumo wrestler, and he's in this party dress and he's twirling around and he just goes, look how pretty I am.
It's bizarre. If you look at this, like, with dress for boys and girls, like, it's a common enough thing that boys don't wear dresses.
Yeah.
Because when you think of a dress, like, it's such a simple thing. It's just one, it's like a toga, isn't it, really? Yeah. You know, even though I used to get consistently slagged about not knowing the difference between a dress and a skirt, I now know the difference.
I was going to quiz you.
But I remember, like, if you think of the colour pink, right?
Yeah.
It was only, I forget now which catalogue it was, but some famous English catalogue back in the 1920s just decided one year that they'd put pink as a girl's colour, and then all of a sudden pink became a girl's colour. And up until that point, it was always a boy's colour. You know, so, yeah. And I remember, do you remember David Beckham wore the sarong? Do you remember
that? Yes, yeah, he got awful stick for that.
I'll be honest with you, I've often looked at the odd maxi dress and thought, you know, I'd be so comfortable in that.
You'd be stunning.
Oh, Bernard, like, I can't even explain how nice it is, especially if you're on your holidays, it's roasting hot, put on a nice maxi dress. Everything's loose. It's flowing. The wind is blowing up.
Bernard, we covered you and your sisters having loads of fights, like every family does. But do you remember your first fight with a friend?
I do remember having a row with somebody in school over football. You know, when you started playing football, probably 6 or 7 years of age, and it was the classic jumpers for goals, and it was and I do remember saying that my argument was it would have come off the post if we had posts. But the argument got so bad that I think it became Lord of the Rings type or Lord of the Flies, where we're split into two groups, and and then I remember that. I do remember I can't remember who it was with. There wasn't many of us, but I do remember, like, we were small, but he made the point, you argued so much that we didn't even get to play the game. You know, so I was kind of thinking, I actually have to, God, who said that to me? So I'm sure some of the lads I grew up with, if they like to listen to this, they'll probably say it to me. But I always take that into my life now, going, I wish those times, or I wish I just didn't keep arguments going. And just went, you know what? Just let it go.
That's the redhead in you, though. You're not evil.
So they say. My mother used to always say that. Watch that head.
Bernard, do you remember your first kiss?
My first kiss, I remember it vividly. I can even tell you the date. It was the 4th of September, 2010.
Oh, my God. That is good memory.
The date I married my wife.
My God. I was like, 2010's a bit late. Like, am I counting this back really wrong?
No,
I have mine in 2003.
Right, okay. Well, that was only 7 years previous. So, it was 2010. And it was my first ever kiss was my wife at the altar. I refused to, we didn't do anything up to that point.
Of course not.
That was my first ever kiss.
You're a good Catholic boy.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Dye in the wool. Yeah. Yeah.
And how did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in the International Comedy Club.
Oh.
I was in a kissing competition. I met her in the International, and actually I wasn't doing stand-up. I was doing a character called myself and another guy called John Cleary from Sligo, who's a comedian. You might know him from, he was in Bridget Naaman as Jimmy.
Yeah.
And he was in Hall's Pictorial Weekly. You might know him from the sketches that on the Tommy Tiernan show as well. But we used to do these two characters on radio called TJ and TJ, and there were two guards. And we started doing them live, and my wife just came in one night and she saw it, and I don't think we were great doing it, but we were breaking down all the time, just laughing at each other. And afterwards, another comedian called Damien Clark said to me, an Australian guy, said, I think you should, she was talking to you, mate. I think you should go and get a number. I went, oh, no, I don't think so. I've always been dreadful. Like I can never read signs. I'm not, you know, was never good at any of that kind of stuff. And I did. And she said, yeah, there's my number. And we took it from there, really, you know. And then, of course, after the kissing competition, my first ever kiss.
Love
it. Got married on the altar. Yeah.
We got married then and there at the kissing competition.
Yeah.
Bernard, do you remember the first time you ever got into trouble?
Well, I've done an alphabetical list here. Like, my troubles have been always, where I just, A, can't keep my mouth shut, or B, just firmly believe what I'm doing is right and consistently keep going ahead with it. The first time I ever got into trouble, so I never got into much trouble in school. They always said I was a bit of a daydreamer, you know, and that, like, you know, that the odd duster would land on your desk because, like, you know, just wake up, you know. The first time I got into serious trouble was when I tried to drive our family car without telling my mother.
Oh, my God. What, Adria?
Can you put, like, a parental advisory sticker on
there? There's 100% going to be parental advisory.
Do not coffee Bernard O'Shea. Yeah.
Our middle fella Tig here, he's only 5, and you know, I hold his hand when we're crossing the road in the estate, never let alone a bigger road. I was his age. I was about 5.
Oh my God.
I was obsessed with cars, and I mean obsessed. So I would have been sitting in the car. It would have been pre-car seats, and you would have sat up. There's a great bit in Bridget Nayman where Jennifer says, sit up in the middle. I can't remember the actual line, but she says, sit up in the middle there, you'll see the road, you know? Yeah. And that was what it was like for us, you know? And so I would have seen them, and I would have pulled the handbrake a few times without letting them know, and that didn't go down too well. And they were quite traditional. My father was anyway, you know, he would have known about it. But the I drove it and I clipped the indicator bulb. And I just remember my parents went berserk. I mean, berserk. And I wasn't allowed near the car for ages. And I was obsessed with cars. I've always been obsessed with cars. I mean, obsessed with them. Not so much hyper cars and, you know, even though I like them, and sports cars, but passenger cars. And I get into people's cars and I start talking about, like, I was in a Renault Megane, a 1997 Renault Megane about 4 or 5 months ago. And I was telling her about how they got the flat floor in. And she's like going, what? Oh my God, let this journey end, please.
A lot of the time when we do this and people tell us the first time they got into trouble, you're like, oh yeah, you really could have got away with that. This time is like life or death.
Yeah, yeah. I also called in a few bombs, but no, I didn't. No, I didn't. Obviously, I didn't. I am joking.
You're like, I did not. I repeat, I did not do that.
I'm just going to put this in here right now. So for the rest of the podcast, anybody who is listening to this, can you please, for the love of God, just realise that you cannot do anything that we talk about ever.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Bernard, tell us about your first job.
Oh, my first job was in a farm in Durrow.
This is where the cow obsession came from.
A great farmer and a great boss. And I painted lots of gates. The only thing I didn't like was there was three jobs I did not like. And they would say, if they were on this call, would kind of agree with me that I was not very good at them. I didn't mind painting. So I'd go paint gates. It was a big farm, so it was a lot of gates to paint. But then when the serious farm work would begin, I was just not able for it. It was so tough. I found it so tough. Now, farmers would be thinking, you're a wimp. That was hay. Hay is horrific. Now, I'm not allergic to it or anything like that, but hay in Ireland gets really heavy. And hay basically is grass that's cut, that's turned in the field until it dries and you bale it, right?
Yeah.
I was just no good. I wasn't. I loved the crack.
Yeah.
I loved, like, when we were in the Jeep going somewhere, or I loved when.
Of course you did, because it's a car.
Yeah, yeah. It's a car. And my boss let me drive it and stuff like that, because we'd be in the land of the low gears and stuff like that. And I loved when we'd be having lunch. But I just hated the work. So, you know, and I felt that's kind of been my life. You know, I remember working on building sites in Dublin when. I only lasted 2 days, but this was back in maybe 2003 and 4 and 5. And well, it was 2004, I think, for me. I lasted 2 days, and I lasted maybe a week in one place. And I loved when it rained, because there was bits of the job you couldn't do when it rained, and we'd just get into the van, and they used to slag me because I'd buy the Times, or I'd buy one of the papers, and yet they'd sneak it off me. It would be like a role reversal of a kind of like, it's like, and I just loved that crack, having tea and custard cream. But then when you were lifting blocks and moving heavy things from one place to another for no reason, I just hated that. And then I remember on one site, I tripped out the entire site because I tried to bring tea up a ladder and it just, and I knocked over a kettle. And I remember the foreman said to me, he goes, listen, he said, you're dangerous.
To
he
everybody.
Said, yeah, don't, please don't.
Never come back.
Never come back, yeah. And then I went into bars. I worked for my cousin in bars, and I was so hopeless at that as well. But I lasted longer at that. I did about maybe 6 or 7 years working in restaurants. I did night portering. I did pots and pans. I worked in kitchens. I did, and at night I'd play music. And sometimes in the same places where I'd work. I remember one place when I was working in the Welsh rugby team were playing Ireland in Lansdowne Road. And these Welsh supporters came in and I was behind the bar. So I served them whatever it was, whenever you were allowed, 12:30. I was talking to them and they had their few drinks. And then in the same place at 2:30, there was music. The guy dropped out that was supposed to accompany the accordion player. So I stepped in and they thought this was the funniest thing in the world, that the guy that was serving the pints was now playing music, right? So then I took my break and I came back and I was sent into the restaurant. So they bizarrely sat down for their tea and I came over to take their order. Now they thought that this is just too Irish, right? And so, but then during halfway through that second half of the shift, my boss came over to me and says, listen, go up to bed because the night porter is not coming in tonight. So you're going to have to. So I went up to the room. And of course, you're not going to sleep in the middle of the day. So anyway, I got to watch the match and Wales won. So the lads were out that night and they came back around 3 o'clock in the morning. And I opened up the door and there I was. I thought, what the hell? You doing everything.
I would assume though, Bernard, too, that all those years of working in the hospitality industry, of working very loosely in construction and farm work and stuff, I would say it gave you such material for all of your gigs and your comedy gigs and stuff, because you were surrounded by people all of the time.
Yeah, well, it only gave me the impetus to go, I need to do something with where I'm talking or writing.
Yeah.
Because
I can't do this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I can't do this for the rest of my life. Like, I'm writing an article at the moment and I came across this thing called hedonic happiness, eudaimonic happiness, right? Where hedonic happiness is achieved through experiences of pleasure and eudaimonic happiness is achieved through experience of meaning and purpose, right?
Okay.
And, you know, so, like, I just wanted hedonic happiness all the time. And, I'd be straight up and go, no, I just want hedonic happiness. And that's why I got addicted to the likes of Instagram. And, like, I don't want to tell tales out of school, but myself and Lottie Ryan, and maybe Emma would know this as well, would have looked at hours of people cutting into cakes.
I was actually like, as soon as you said Instagram, that popped into my head. I was like, Bernard watched those really relaxing videos and people cutting into the soap you used to like as well.
Oh, my God. I still, and you know, I had to put a lock on it on my phone. You know,
that it, like, cuts down after a couple of hours of using XF.
I was working on a gig for the last 2 years with some brilliant people, and they introduced me to this these people that fold paper or fold sheets. What's it called again?
ASMR.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely fantastic.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can't go to sleep now without. I was like, I'm putting the sheets into. It's going. I don't know. I'm trying to get in on the AMSR stuff.
ASMR. You need to get the name right first. ASMR.
ASMR, is
it? Like, as Mr.
Yeah, as Mr. Yeah. I'm going to try and get in on that. Like stuff like, I'm squeezing the bag now against the side of the cup.
Oh, right.
Because I want it very strong. And I'm trying, tiny drop of milk. Oh, the little red ring at the top of the milk has fallen in. I won't use my finger because I think
you need to be a bit softer, Bernard. You need to be
practice again.
I'm squeezing it at the side of my cup now.
No, you're leading me down an avenue.
Bernard O'Shea, your very first girlfriend.
Oh, my very first girlfriend. I can actually tell you the date that I met her.
Definitely, it's the 3rd of September, 2010.
September 2010 was the first time I ever met my wife. Never met her before. We just got married on that day. Everyone showed up.
After the International Kissing Festival.
After the International Kissing Festival. When I tell you my very first girlfriend, you know, I was saying to my wife about this. I was saying, like, you know, God, my first girlfriend. And when I told her actually who I felt who my first girlfriend was, she thought, she said, you don't tell anyone that. But I got a He-Man set when I was 6, right? I got a He-Man set and in it was Skeletor, He-Man and She-Ra, right? My first girlfriend, I will say now straight off the bat, was She-Ra.
How did you guys get together? How did, you know, the conversation happen?
Where did He-Man go?
My mother bought me for her in Ken Black's Port Leash. For my birthday. I was obsessed with her and we, you know, and He-Man would try and consistently break stuff up. And it was like, and she had a bit of a thing for Skeletor at the time as well. But I was like, no. So, yeah, She-Ra was my first girlfriend. And I had that doll for ages until we got our first dog and he ate it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Sorry, she ate it. It was a girl dog.
She's
yeah.
So jealous.
Well, it was young as well, and she ate the tires off my bike.
Oh Jesus!
So it was then we kind of went, this poor dog, like, bite into things. Yeah. So
you were driving cars at that stage. You didn't even need a bike.
Yeah, I would say Shira was my first girlfriend. Yeah.
Okay, Shira. So your first holiday, did Shira go with you on your first holiday? Can you tell us about
Here's
that?
The thing, right, for holidays for, growing up for me were odd. We never really did holidays. And my father was from Kerry. He was from a little village called Annascaul, which is out in West Kerry. And we would get in the car in Durrow, in Laois, and we would drive to West Kerry, no motorways. We would go to see our cousins in a place called Cowan Dove, and we would talk to them, and he'd bring his accordion and they'd play music. And then we'd get in the car at 9 o'clock that night and come back to Durrow.
Oh, God.
And I used to get in the boot. Because our granny might stay at home, but I had three older sisters, mother. So we'd be always fighting about, that's my space, and be going, you don't have a space. And if my granny came, she'd be smoking her players, and then we weren't allowed to roll down the windows because we'd all get earaches and die. But I used to get in the boot. You know, I used to get in the boot, and my mother used to say, if you want anything, just knock. So I'd be like going, knock, 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 air, please. So I'd just hold on to the accordion, and we'd just go. And we'd always stop in Limerick, and it'd be maybe once a year where you go to a restaurant, you know, and I'd always try and order something snazzy, you know, because, you know, it's like, oh my God, I'll have creme caramel. And my father would go, you'll have sausage and chips. You won't eat it. I heard that a lot. You won't eat it. You'll have that. And we come back on the same day. I went abroad when I was 16 playing music and went to Germany. And that was my first time ever on a plane. To this day, when I say this to people, they find it embarrassing because they go, you didn't do that. When I was 16 and I asked the air hostess, could I go up to the cabin? Because, you know, normally it's like, you know, little kids that go up. You know what I mean? But I'm slightly obsessed with airplanes as well. So I went up and I was there like for way too long. It was Lufthansa. In fairness to Lufthansa, your man said, would you like to be a pilot? And I was going, yeah. And I actually asked, could I fly it? And they went, no fucking way.
What was the first meal you ever cooked for yourself?
Well, I'm a decent cook. I can cook. Growing up, we would have had like fabulous dinners. Even now, my kids who are all under seven, they will say like when we're going to Dora, they'll go, oh my God, we're going. You know, they get excited for my and does my wife excited for my mother's dinner?
Stop.
She was an amazing cook, you know, would have done like mad adventurous things in the 80s, almost like Jennifer and Bridget Neiman, like a spaghetti bolognese and chicken broccoli bake, these amazing dishes. But see, I went working in kitchens quite young as well, so you would have been cooking. I probably cooked something in an industrial kitchen before I cooked something for myself. The difference is there is that you're not cooking a chicken breast. You're cooking 800 chickens.
So you have to get it right.
Yeah. Well, no, the computer just does it. You go 840 pounds of chicken or whatever. But the I do remember my sister Siobhan was obsessed with omelettes. And I remember I tried to make an omelette one day and we both ate it and we were so sick for like a week. And obviously I just made a hames of it somehow.
Bernard, do you remember the first time you got drunk?
Oh, yes. I was in Germany.
I love it.
And I would have had a drink prior to it, but the beer was just a bit stronger.
It is, though. Have you ever been to Oktoberfest?
I've never been. I've been to Oktoberfest here, but never there.
I was told I've been to Oktoberfest. I remember clearly. But see, the thing is, when you're a younger person and you get drunk, it's like, oh, well, yeah, of course I remember everything. Like, you know, I'm an elastic band of hope. There's nothing that deters me from.
What is this fear you speak of?
Yeah. It's the classic. I remember like having a conversation. I actually remember the pub as well. I remember having a conversation with like a good few people and we're having fun and stuff like that. And I wouldn't have had, I maybe have had three beers maybe. And I just remember being completely and utterly sober. And then I went to get up and I went, oh, I can't get up.
It's always when you go to stand up or when the air hits you and you're like, yeah. Oh God. Or I find when when you go in and you sit on the toilet and then you're like, yeah. Oh, I'm spitting.
Yeah, it's like, oops-a-daisy, why can't I stand? And then literally like all the drunkenness came from my toes up through my legs and it was like, I was like, oh my God, what is happening? You know, And I remember like walking home and just thinking, this is hilarious. Why can't I walk straight? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I wouldn't have been like very drunk or anything like that. But I just remember kind of going, okay.
Bernard O'Shea, our very last question for you today, and I think that I will be able to tell you the date it happened.
Yeah.
Your very first ride.
My very first ride, yes. Well, it happened on the 4th of September.
We tried.
Oh, Bernard, you have been an absolute joy to have on the pod. We're so happy you came on my first ride.
Thank you so much, Bernard.
Thanks, guys. Thanks a million.
Check us out on rte.ie/podcasts or wherever you listen to your favourite shows. And if you like us, give us an L subscribe.
And don't forget to rate our podcast, as long as it's 5 stars. If it's not, then don't bother. Just leave us alone.
See you next time on My First Ride.